This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 20th of April 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're talking musical instruments and asking, is acoustic on its way out? The instrumentation of big orchestras is dictated by the great composers and pop music tends to be developed electronically. So where is there a space for innovation in acoustic instruments and who's keeping up with traditional craft and developing the ones we're already familiar with?
The high degree of technology is absolutely astounding. The amount of money we've invested in engineering technology is really superb. It's an art form.
Over the next 30 minutes, we'll speak to piano meisters Steinway & Sons about their latest tinkering with the ivories. We'll meet Midori House's local oboe maker. Sounds ruder than it is. There's a rather impressive new acoustic instrument in Istanbul that doesn't sound acoustic at all. And we'll meet a woman in San Francisco who makes her own instruments from just about anything she can get her hands on. It's music to our ears, and it's all coming up here on Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. We'll begin with a classic that's being honed and crafted just over the road from the Monocle HQ. The most acoustic of acoustic instruments comes surely from the woodwind family, from which music can be conjured out of nothing but wood and the human breath. Haworth of London is one of the world's leading manufacturers of woodwind instruments, specialising in oboes. Monocle's Henry Reese Sheridan made a quick trip to their string of shops to speak to senior oboe manager, such a thing exists, Michael Britton.
The company was started in 1948, and it started in Blandford Street, which is just around the corner from here. And then after a few years, it moved here to Chilton Street, and just were a few people working on oboes alone. And it's just over many, many years that we've expanded into a big woodwind retail section here. But primarily, we are oboe makers. And we have in the company approximately 55 to 60 people, about 25 here in London, and roughly about the same in Worthing at our factory in Sussex.
Could you explain the manufacturing process to me? Where are Haworth instrument made and how?
The factory is in Worthing, and just by the seaside, and the wood that we use for the oboes comes from Tanzania and Mozambique, and it's African blackwood, very, very hard. And the tree takes about 60 years to grow. And of course, because of the vagaries of the weather out there, a lot of the wood is not usable. So we purchase our wood in billets, that's in small sections, from specialist dealers.
You also sell some less famous cousins of the oboe that I'm extremely interested in, the cor anglais, the oboe d'amour, and the wonderfully named tenoroon. Could you tell me a little bit about these instruments?
In the oboe section, you have, of course, the normal oboe, and the oboe d'amour is a very specialist instrument. Most of the music written for that instrument was during Bach's time, during the Baroque time, although there are one or two composers in modern times who've written specifically for it. We don't make and sell as many today as we used to do, and that's due to the period orchestras, the classical orchestras, who are using now authentic instruments. So we make so few of these instruments. The ones we do produce are basically for the United States and for countries like Germany, where they still have this great church tradition. The cor anglais, of course, we sell many of those, and they're used in all the symphony orchestras. It is a specialist instrument, and it is a beautiful sound. But, of course, it's very expensive, but we don't make lots of those. The tenoroon we have made for us is imported, and it's basically for young children. It's a fourth higher than a normal bassoon, and we have youngsters from the age of 7, 8, 9 playing on these instruments, and they play on them for a few years, and that helps them develop onto the full-size bassoon.
Now, lots of people nowadays buy musical instruments from online retailers, but you maintain shops spread across several listed buildings in a very smart part of London, which must come with significant overheads attached. What can you offer as a music specialist by maintaining these physical shops that internet retailers can't?
Well, for example, if we just take our bassoon section, all the bassoon staff here been through to music college, music academy. They've got degrees in performance. Our part-time staff, for example, play with the London Philharmonic, other great orchestras. So we have a tremendous amount of experience between the whole group of staff here, all the different instruments from the clarinets, saxophones, up to bassoons and oboes. So this, of course, is gold, really. And I don't think people on the internet and online shopping could get anywhere near this sort of service. And of course, there's the backup too. I think I remember many people come in here to try some instruments, not particularly oboes or bassoons, but for example, on saxophones, and they will try all the manufacturers we've got here, which are lots, and then go and buy the same instrument on the internet because they can save an awful lot of money. So what a lot of these internet businesses offer is just the price and no backup.
Many people would regard woodwind instrument manufacturing as quite an arcane field. Looking into the future, what do you think the balance is between conservatism and innovation in the field?
If you go onto our website and you can see on one section of the website how these instruments are produced, the high degree of technology is absolutely astounding. The amount of money we've invested in engineering and technology is really superb. It's an art form. And we've got lots of young and very, very clever people there at the factory, and also lots of people with great experience producing fantastic instruments. Everything is made by ourselves now. We don't import anything, not even a screw or a rod. So it's all manufactured at our base in Worthing. And more and more, the guys down there, the technical director down there, looking more to the future for more modern engineering and computing and 3D, 4D printing.
Do you think we're going to be looking at some point in the future people printing their own instruments at home?
I don't think that could ever happen, really. I think as far as making some of the mechanism with a printer, that's fine. I mean, I hear now, I bought a copy of The Economist last year, and on the front page, there was a picture of a white violin, and it said, print your own Stradivarius. And they weren't, you know, they weren't, I know you think it's rather crazy, but at MIT in the States, they've already printed a flute. And I've heard of someone printing a trombone. But I think the oboe is going to be really very, very complex to do. But it will certainly help in the technology and the accuracy of manufacture.
That was Michael Britton, Senior Oboe Manager at Haworth, speaking to Monocle's Henry Rhys Sheridan and teaching him how to tell his tenoroons from his bassoons. It's made me want to get my own jazz flute out of the cupboard. We're heading east now for some rather spectacular instrumental innovation in Istanbul. Görkem Şen is a 33-year-old Turkish musician. He recently invented a new acoustic instrument, as you do, called the yekhabar. It consists of an upright, fretted neck strung with tuned strings, which can be played with a bow, an arm's length of coiled springs that connects the bottom of the neck to membranes that look essentially like drums, and a large frame to hold it all in place. If the yekhabar had an engine, you could drag race it on Tatooine. The effect is an acoustic instrument that produces natural reverb, echoes and delay, a symphonic synthesizer sound with no electricity required. But how on earth does it work? Monocle contributor Caleb Lauer meets Görkem to find out.
Coiled springs work on it, and this is carry the vibration from strings. That vibrations reach the membrane, and sounds occur and happen.
But there's strings on that, right?
Yeah, there's two strings now. But the first yekhabar was 30 strings. 30 strings, yes.
What?
Uh-huh.
And this one's only two?
Yes, this is easy version. But and range, very good range. I mean, this is 5 octave, playable 5 octave and more.
The frame, and then these two long springs each sort of descend to two different sized drum membranes. Yeah. And you're saying that the vibration from the string is being carried by these coiled springs to the different, the drums. Yeah. Now, how did you get this idea?
This is long process. I try to find a new something, because there are lots of instruments in the world, Eastern and Western side, and totally thousands of instruments, and all of them is different mentality. And I inspired from that, and I get little brave firstly, and start to experiment. And I little imitation, little new things.
I didn't also realize you do have a violin bow, or something that looks like a violin bow here.
Yeah, bow. It's horse tail bow, yes.
Mm-hmm. You can bow the strings. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Can you play a bit of that for me?
On the strings, lots of technique you can use. Harmonic touchings, fingers, and also fingernail, and also little touchings. I got a relationship with springs, and firstly I connect the long springs to the membrane, and it makes acoustic reverb and also more space effects, and like this, and also when you talk or shout, woo, hey, say, Yay Bahar! This also drum. This is spring delay and reverb and all delay effects on it.
So I just should explain to people listening that when you hit the drum, here, just hit it once. And that echo that's happening after is entirely produced by an acoustic structure or an acoustic instrument.
Yes, yes, yes. I found a new thing, new sound source, and I really concentrate on it, and 5 years duration, I improve development and evolution is continue. On the neck, there is some capo system, there will be some capo system, and it makes you more musical space also. And transposer and modulation capo, you can change your note easily, you can change your tone easily when you play also.
So for example, if you're playing in the key of C, let's say, you could easily just move the capo up and be all of a sudden in the key of G.
Yeah, chat. And very with magnets, and very easy to control.
With magnets.
Yes, yes. Ah. And this is a stable system in here, and you can put your capos where you want. You play just bass string capo, and this root note is changed, and that time tone change, and your modulation, according to your modulation, you play the melodies on the treble strings.
I mean, you obviously have some skill in woodworking and this type of stuff.
Yeah, and this is my hobby. Comes from my childhood, maybe. You know, the Lego tools, Lego from.
If you practice with Lego, you too can invent the Yay Bahar.
Na nice and weird. In fact, that was beautiful, wasn't it? What a wonderful instrument of yearning and kind of laser beam sound effects. That was the Yerebar inventor, Gorchem Shen, speaking to Caleb Lauer in Istanbul. After the break, we speak to the people at Steinway & Sons to find out how they're still developing an acoustic classic. Stay tuned.
Top ingredients, world-class service, less foam and pretension, and honest food made with dedication. Monocle focuses on what we think really matters and launches the Monocle Restaurant Awards. Stay tuned to Monocle 24 to hear of the places we value highly, where we want to dine again and again, and where most restaurant ranking lists may not guide you to.
What does it look like? What is the vitality of this place on the street? And yes, the food has to be outstanding as well, but there are many other elements that go beyond that.
The nominees will be announced every Friday on our food and drink program, The Menu, and the winner will be announced in July. Don't miss out. Tune into The Menu every Friday at 1900 hours London time.
You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and today we're talking musical instruments and asking, is acoustic on its way out? Well, Steinway & Sons have been manufacturing top-of-the-line pianos in New York City since 1853. The company has just unveiled its most impressive product innovation in the last 70 years, a new self-playing piano, or player piano, called Spirio. The new instrument plays the most accurate reproductions of live performances ever achieved by a player piano. To showcase its impressive ability to mirror live performance, Steinway has created a repertoire of in-house recordings for Spirio by a roster of over 1,700 Steinway artists. Monocle's Megan Billings headed to Steinway's Manhattan offices to chat with Eric Feidner, Steinway's VP of Music Technology and CMO, Chief Managing Officer, I guess, Darren Marshall, to hear Steinway artist Jenny Lynn play for a new recording.
It's a system that's run by a unit underneath the piano that's driving solenoids that activate the notes, and also the pedaling, the damper pedal and the soft pedal. So it's going to give you all the nuance of a live performance through Spirio.
That was Steinway's Vice President of Music Technology walking Monocle through the technicalities of the new Spirio piano. It's a Steinway grand piano that has the capability of mirroring a live artist in a more sophisticated way than ever before. The piano comes with a wide repertoire of songs that can be selected through an iPad app.
You can create playlists. There are curated playlists. It's very nuanced, very wide dynamic range. It's pedaling also. Very nuanced. It's incremental degrees from all the way down to all the way up when you push the damper pedal down, not just on and off. Now we're going to listen to something, just a very soft piece of music. This is John O'Connor playing John Field. Of all professional classical pianists perform on a Steinway piano. So to them, they understand why they need an instrument of this level of quality. So for people who don't play the piano, in order for them to appreciate what we're selling, the Steinway grand piano, the Spirio gives them the opportunity to appreciate what it's like to have a real artist performing on the instrument, because that's really the way you're going to understand the value of a Steinway.
Steinway was founded in Manhattan in 1853 by Henry Engelhard Steinway, who immigrated to the U.S. from Germany. Over the next 30 years, Henry, along with his sons, developed the modern piano. CMO Darren Marshall tells us what makes this company so special.
Our brand is 162 years old. It's been refined over that time. 125 patents, 162 years. This instrument has been refined to a level that is absolutely immaculate. So it produces a sound which is pristine. It's an instrument that brings emotion out of any piece of music. Trees come into one end of the factory, and then 12 months, 300 craftsmen made by hand, 12,000 handmade wooden pieces put together using technology and designs that have been refined for over 162 years. It's an instrument that is perfect in its design, its conception, its execution. As a pianist, to be able to feel the difference between this instrument and another, it all is about craftsmanship and being able to craft something that allows an artist to be able to express their craft.
When pianists travel, we don't know what instrument we're getting. But if you know you're getting a Steinway, you're not worried because you know that it's going to be a good piano regardless.
That's longtime Steinway artist Jenny Lin, who's at the Steinway Studios recording on the new Spirio when Monocle visits. To her, no piano can rival a Steinway, and no stereo can do what the Spirio can.
You can really hear exactly the way the artist wanted it in terms of volume and, of course, the details that we want. And, I mean, for the artist, it's really a bonus. And right now, the best part is it's just a completely different listening experience for the consumer.
For Monocle in New York, I'm Megan Billings.
You're tuned in to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. And to round things off, we're going from a classic to the experimental. The San Francisco Bay Area has become a haven for unusual musical instruments. For the past several decades, its experimental visual art and music movements have influenced a group of individuals who are creating sound-making objects with materials that are as common as hair combs and tape measures and as risky as Bunsen burners. Some are finding inspiration in nature, like Cheryl Leonard, an award-winning composer who's written for the Kronos Quartet. Katie McCurran visited Cheryl's studio, which is about a stone's throw or spitting distance from the city's Golden Gate Park. And this is her report.
It's not that I really feel they're limiting. It's just that I'm more interested in unusual sounds that they don't produce. I have nothing against traditional instruments. I think they're wonderful. It's just not what I'm focused on working with right now. So I'm interested in finding new sounds in unusual materials, mostly from nature.
So when did you first get the idea or the inspiration to create your own instruments?
I started out playing normal instruments, and then I was interested in extended techniques on normal instruments, playing an instrument in an untraditional way. For example, if you were playing the violin, maybe instead of bowing the strings, you'd bow the tail piece, which is the little piece of wood that holds the strings on. And then I was hanging out with a bunch of people who did improvisation, and they would play found objects. So they would just find some piece of metal on the street and bring it to rehearsal and then make sounds with it. So I was doing that for a while. And then eventually I decided to try making sounds with more natural materials, so things like driftwood and shells and sand and bone and feathers.
Do you have any of those first instruments here?
Yeah, actually I do. This one here is made out of driftwood, so there's a big piece of driftwood on the bottom and a bunch of smaller stick-like driftwood pieces that are coming up off of the base. So I call it the driftwood pipe organ, because for some reason when I built it, I thought it looked like a mini pipe organ. And mainly I bow the sticks, the little sticks that are coming up. Besides bowing it, you can also use a swisher, which is some really long pine needles.
Thank you.
explain how this piece of driftwood is being amplified.
So I have what's called a contact microphone on here. It picks up the vibrations from the instrument from touching it. So not through the air, but from just the actual vibration of the material.
Let's see some more of your instruments.
So this is a piece of bullwhip kelp from the beach here in Northern California. It's those things that look like giant whips that you find on the beach. And it's dried out, and then I've made it into a flute.
Was it hard to teach yourself how to play that?
Well, I knew how to play the normal flute, but it is a little different than a regular metal flute. It takes a lot more air volume. It's bigger, so it'd be kind of like playing a bass flute or something.
Are you ever surprised by the sounds that come out of these objects that you choose?
Yes.
100% of the time?
No, not 100. I mean, when I first started, yes, 100% of the time. But as you spend time investigating different materials, I might have a hypothesis of what it will sound like. And sometimes I'm correct.
You got a National Science Foundation grant to go to Antarctica. How did that influence your instrument building?
Well, I'd already been working with natural materials before I went to Antarctica. So my proposal was to do a project that combined field recordings of natural sounds from Antarctica with sounds produced by natural objects. So I was down there for about 5 weeks, and I collected sets of rocks of different pitches that sounded good together, a bunch of penguin bones from already dead penguins. No penguins were harmed in this project. So this is an instrument. It's just called the bone slug. It's not a very pretty name, but it looks a bit like a slug. It's two penguin leg bones that are mounted in a piece of driftwood with a hydrophone taped on to the bones. And then I'm playing it by pulling a cord across the bones. I'm so waiting for someone to hire me to do a horror movie soundtrack. Or sci-fi. I can totally do that.
Well, that was Cheryl Leonard giving us all the willies. I don't think any willies were harmed in the making of that report, which was rather beautiful and unusual by Katie McCurran. Which brings us to the end of this week's show, where we started by asking if acoustic instruments might be on their way out. But guess what? Our fears remain unrealised. The old catgut and hammer, the woodwind and brass, is in rude health. Maybe we should all keep from blushing as we walk past that unplayed piano and pick it up again, huh? You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24, and my producer was Holly Fisher, who is both grand and upright. Join us again at the same time next week, where we'll be picking another cultural poser. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.